The first three speakers, counting me as the third, are dealing with three fundamental phrases that are integral to an understanding of world brotherhood colonies. The first is that, world brotherhood. You know, we live in a country that until recently has been relatively unified in terms of race and culture. The area that I live in now, which is the Silicon Valley area, is actually divided up now in thirds, I'm told. One third of the people are what you would think of as Californians, native Californians. One third are from Spanish-speaking countries. One third are from Asian countries or island countries. So literally, you walk around where we are now. Our local market has signs in English and Russian. All of the Sears and Target kind of stores have all their signs now doubling in Spanish. We all know if you go to Fry's, you have to speak Chinese or Hindi to really be waited on well. So at least in pockets of the United States, the concept of world brotherhood is beginning to happen. Of course, we see it especially in our European community, where you go and you see countries that historically have been enemies, where the people are coming together, which is a far more meaningful reality than we can understand here. There's still bullet holes in the buildings around Italy, and then you have the Germans and the Americans and all the people who fought one another. And even when there were the wars in the Balkans, all of the different countries would come to Ananda and just meditate together. And so we have world brotherhood. The second is the lifestyle, which Freeman was talking about, home, job, and church in one place, which is really quite a remarkable integration. And the third principle that I've been asked to speak about is plain living and high thinking. And it's the idea of how renunciation and simple living fits into this whole picture. I've been reading the diary of a disciple of Anandamoyi Ma, a woman named Swami Atmananda. She had 50 years with Anandamoyi Ma. She was a very deep and beautiful disciple. And the book includes statements by Ma. And this one is the one that just really made me stop and think. Ma is saying, if you go to the marketplace and you see some beautiful object that you desire to have, but choose not to buy it and leave it in the marketplace. Ma said, if a clairvoyant person were to walk into that marketplace, when they saw that object, they would feel your desires still in that object. Isn't that a terrifying prospect? Because what we're talking about is the conservation and the focus of energy. Jyotish talked about self-realization and energization being the fundamental reality of this path of moving into Dwapara Yuga. We're moving out of form, we're moving into energy. So we, as the harbingers of that age, and we, as people living in community, are in that transition between form and energy. Now, Master himself, when he spoke of St. Francis as being his patron saint, he said that St. Francis was devoted to Lady Poverty. Master said, I am devoted to Lady Simplicity. So in a sense, in an age where form was so dominant, which was Kali Yuga, you had to really be absolutely determined in rejecting all manifestations, all form, because form was so much the definition of everyday life that you had to reject it completely. Now we're at a time where energy is becoming the definition, but still we have this balancing act that we have to follow between form and energy. Recently, a couple of years ago, actually, we had to move from the apartment that we had lived in our community for 18 years into a place that was about 100 yards away. But it doesn't really matter if it's 100 yards or 1,000 miles. Everything has to be taken out of one place and carried over to the other place. And just as perfect timing would have it, David, my husband, hurt his back just in time for the move. So he did the entire move from one of these comfortable lounge chairs that these ladies are all sitting in now, and I and Gary and Rick and various other great souls in our community moved every item that we own. Of course, if you pick it up and hold it in your hands and have to carry it somewhere, all of a sudden a question arises in your mind. You know, does this go in the dumpster or does it go into the new place that I'm living? And one, I'm no expert on any of the feng shui or vastu or any of those things that people know in great detail. But one principle was shared with me, which is the only principle I found that I need. Any physical object in your life, you hold it in your hand and you ask yourself three questions. First of all, does this take energy away from me on any level? You know, you pick up a little shatka, that's the Yiddish word, a little thing, chachka, thing that, you know, some object that somebody lovingly gave you, but you've never liked it. And you hold it in your hand, and immediately you have the conflict between your friendship and your actual taste. And, you know, it's been sitting on the shelf all this time. It goes, and this is the instruction, it goes into an opaque plastic bag, so you can't even see it. It goes into a black one. You just put it, just get it out of your life. If you hold it in your hand, and it's neutral, but in some way it's practical. Maybe it's your kitchen knife. And it's a neutral item. It's not beautiful, but it you actually use it. You touch it every day, and it does something for your life. You may keep it. Okay. And then, of course, anything that you pick up that actually gives you energy. I often ask myself, you know, what is my single most valuable possession? I've had the same Kriya Mala since 1972. And I always think that if the house burned down, I would take my Kriya Mala. You know, even if my Kriyas are going badly. I was remembering recently, this is totally off the subject, this incident that didn't make it into the book I wrote about Swami, but maybe it'll make it into Volume 2. At that time, this was very early on, we lived in the little trailers over where Ayodhya is now. And I had this little tiny travel trailer. It was all I needed. And it was somewhat cold in there, and I had one of those narrow down sleeping bags. And in the wintertime, we'd meditate just by getting into your sleeping bag and then carefully arranging yourself on one of those kneeling benches. And then you'd meditate inside of it. It was very handy. It worked just fine. And then you unzip it and lay it over your bed. We didn't have a lot of money. So often I would just take that sleeping bag and I'd hang it on a clothesline, which was about, you know, 20 feet from the door of my trailer. Well, apparently one day I must have dropped my mala into that bag. I didn't realize that. So I hung the sleeping bag out, and I didn't know that the mala was on the ground. Swamiji rarely came to visit my trailer, but on this particular day he did. He walks around the corner. He calls out, you know, Asha, and then he sees the mala and he picks it up. I open the door and he holds it out and he says, "Bad meditation?" But there are things in our life, and we know that this is a material object, but somehow this material object has been imbued with something that gives me energy. You see, every time I hold that mala, my whole spiritual life is in that mala, right? Now, simple living is not necessarily as we first thought it was when we first moved here. People just tried to live without shoes in the winter, without heat, sometimes without food, without running water. Sometimes we had to, but there was a bottom line. But then people would push it. Let's be St. Francis. And invariably, they got pneumonia, almost always. It just was not, as a rule, supported by Divine Mother. And Swamiji himself never followed a policy like that. In fact, in 78, after he finished the path and went to India. And he wrote, everything was by these letters, remember letters? He wrote letters from India, and he was in Kashmir, and he was visiting Suffering Moses, the great artisan there. He saw that carved furniture. He said, "This is a dying art." Seva was with him then, and he bought all this furniture, the furniture that's in Crystal Hermitage now. Now, of course, he bought that furniture, which fits beautifully in Crystal Hermitage, for this leaky little dome that he had at the time. There wasn't a single building at Ananda that had the slightest relationship to that furniture. You know, I mean, I don't think I could have even got one of the chairs inside the door of my trailer, what to speak of a dining room table for 12. And he just said, well, you know, it's a dying art, we should buy it. And so he did. He brought it all home. Fortunately, they had the Ananda house, and they stored it there for a while. It sort of gradually made its way until Crystal Hermitage manifested, and then it's been there perfect ever since. Now Kashmir is virtually destroyed, and so this was really something. But he said quite simply, it's necessary because if we were just living isolated, he said it wouldn't matter, but because we are representing Master's teachings to the world, we need a certain refinement in the way that we live so that people will recognize the refinement of our ideas. He says if our physical world is too unrefined, they will not be able to imagine that our ideas are as refined as they are. But so that's the point at which you touch it, and it gives you energy, because it gives us energy for what we're really trying to do, which is ourselves to be in tune, and then through our attunement, to be a radiating example to the world. Now, I think for every person, simple really varies. You know, I run, as Sriman mentions, you know, the hospitality of our homes. We simply call our house, we call it Chela Bhavan, the house of the disciples, but what we call it informally is Hotel Praver, because that's really what it is. And so when I moved, it's like either David and I are standing up eating the food right out of the cartons, as Sriman said, or else we're serving elegant dinners for 50 people. You know, so there's nothing in between. So I have all this stuff in the house, which is part of the inn, the hotel, and the fine dining facility, you know. And then in the midst of that, we have our own little world, you know. But we must, at all times, as Master said, be very, very careful that our energy is in charge of matter and that matter is not in charge of our energy. That's what it is to live plain. That's what it is to live simple. Communities, of course, foster this. People come to our community, which is an apartment complex, and the rents are not cheap. Rents are not cheap anywhere in our area. When Paula years ago bought the church that she bought in Portland, we joked that the entire cost of the church in Portland was earnest money where we live. I mean, the money you put down to show that you're serious. They could buy a whole church for what we just had to put down to show that we were real customers. I mean, the economy of Silicon Valley is totally insane, but that's the second question. And the apartments are perfectly adequate, but you know, they're not going to get into Architecture Digest. Not likely, you know? So people come and they're a little dismayed sometimes. But I say, look, you live in an apartment someplace else. Your apartment is your fort against a hostile world. You don't go into the hall. You don't open your door. You can get mugged between your car and your apartment door. And the people around you are often quite disharmonious to your values. I said, you live here, and it's true that your apartment is just your apartment, but your apartment is really a room in this gigantic family home. And when you open your door, you're stepping into your home, not out of it. And you see, that consciousness does several things for us. For one thing, we don't need as much personally, because we're not trying to compensate for the lack of anything else. And secondly, well, why would I own, you know, a big machine when we can all own one machine together? You know, if every time we have too many people in our house, I go over to Dunbarren Mounds and I get their bowls. That's all. Why would I keep that many bowls in our house? Would they just bring their bowls over? Or you go to the community room and you get what you need. You don't have to own it all yourself. You can literally, physically live cheaper and simpler. But above all, you can live simpler within your heart, because what we are seeking through form, we receive through consciousness and energy. That's what Master was talking about. That's the simplicity. The simplicity is that consciousness rules. And consciousness, ultimately, you see, is singular. Form is multiple and endlessly multiplying. You know, it just goes on and on and on. Consciousness, the more you get into it, the simpler it becomes. The plain living, plain simple living that Master's talking about is based on high thinking. And behind everything, what we see is that presence of spirit. And since that presence of spirit is everywhere, we don't need to collect a lot of stuff to have it. And above all, we don't need to collect a lot internally. It just becomes that inner relationship between ourselves and God.